Hello and welcome to The Doctor Will Hear You Now, the podcast hosted by me, Dr. Zoe Williams. Now, I'm a practicing GP and medical professional, but in this podcast series, I'm not the expert. In The Doctor Will Hear You Now, I'm here to learn from you. Each episode, I'll face a health condition which is riddled with stigma and misinformation. By passing the microphone, literally, to a well-known name, join me as I learn their story. Plus, with the help of our wonderful series sponsor, Bupa, we'll be joined a bit later on in each episode by someone who has a lot of experience in the subject matter. Together, we'll leave each episode with a greater understanding. This is The Doctor Will Hear You Now. Now, when I set out planning this podcast right at the beginning, there was one topic that was top of my list, and there was one person who I really hoped might be able to spare the time to come and discuss this topic with me. Now, the topic is menopause, and joining me today to discuss her experience is TV and radio presenter, celebrity MasterChef champion, my fellow This Morning family member, podcast host, so I'm hoping she can give me a few tips at the end, and also a new author of your first book, Just Getting Started, Lessons in Life, Love and Menopause. Of course, it's the wonderful, gorgeous Lisa Snowden. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, Zoe. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Honestly, so honoured to have you sat here with me. Now, we always start off this podcast by asking the same question. Well, similar question. It varies slightly. So in your case, the question is, what is the one thing you should never say to somebody who is in the midst of their menopause?
Okay, so I personally don't think it's one specific thing that you shouldn't say, because we're not like kind of these crazed animals who are just going to attack you. We could. But usually, I think it's about having more understanding and more empathy of somebody who is going through this at this time in their life, because there's so many things they could be experiencing. So, you know, if they haven't been sleeping, if they're feeling really anxious, you know, some people experiencing menopausal symptoms or perimenopausal symptoms feel suicidal. So, you know, I would just have empathy and understanding and just be kind. Because I kind of think that, you know, back in the day when people used to say, oh, she's got a period, don't talk to her. Oh, gosh, she's going to pussy. It's that kind of flippant, you know, really just unthoughtful sort of attitude, which I think needs to kind of go. So I think it's not the one thing. I just think it's about having some empathy and some understanding.
Yeah, good. Well, that's what this podcast is all about, because, you know, obviously I'm a medical professional and therefore I have a scientific understanding about a lot of healthcare conditions. But what I don't have is lived experience. And actually, a lot of my healthcare colleagues, we don't have lived experience. So that's why it's called The Doctor Will Hear You Now, because this is really about somebody who has a lived experience sharing the details beyond the science, beyond the medicine, of what it's like, so that hopefully everybody who listens can be more understanding and just have a bit more kindness,
exactly,
a bit more empathy.
Yeah.
The topic today is menopause. And I wanted to ask you, when was the first time you heard the word menopause and when was the first time you heard the word perimenopause?
So perimenopause is a word that I think is really new. It's new to me. It's new on my radar. So looking back, I think it must have been in my early 40s.
Right.
And I think it was Mariella Frostrop who did a documentary. And that was the first ever program I'd seen. And it was a real education for me. She was talking about menopause. I don't know if she mentioned the word perimenopause. She must have. So that was like, obviously, over 10 years ago. But it wasn't something that I thought would happen to me that soon. Because for me, a menopausal woman was much, much older. You know, somebody who was really frail. Somebody who might be sort of in their 60s and, you know. So, yeah. So I think it was about 11 years ago. But it was still seemed so far off in the future for me. It wasn't like, oh, yeah. Because then 2 years later, when I started experiencing what I now know to be perimenopausal symptoms, I didn't realise that that's what was happening to me.
Do you know what? As you're saying that, I'm thinking about all the little leaflets in hospitals and GP surgeries that say menopause. Mm. And you're right. The image is of a lady who has white hair.
Yeah.
You know,
frail. She might need a walker. It's, it's totally not the woman that looks like me, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I do color my hair. Make no mistake about that. But I can, I fit and healthy pretty much, you know, and I've got a really, you know, kind of lots of energy. And so it was a shock and I definitely didn't put two and two together.
There's a contrast here as well, because in your book, which we'll talk a bit more about later on, I'm really excited to talk to you about that. But you shared in that book that actually when it was at the other end, thinking about periods, thinking about your period starting, you wrote that your mum spoke to you about that when you were about 8 years old and you knew about it. You were sort of armed with all the knowledge, and then your periods actually started later than most of your friends. So you kind of had all that knowledge and you were waiting, yet with perimenopause, you didn't have the knowledge and it just came before you'd anticipated it.
I mean, you don't get taught that at school, do
No.
you? Or you do get taught about puberty and periods and pregnancy, and then perimenopause, menopause is just never mentioned. You're just sort of left to your own devices just to try and figure it all out. My mum never spoke about it. My nan never spoke about it. I didn't have any information from any of my older family members. So it was a complete surprise for me. I was totally uneducated. And it's been, you know, the last 10 years that I've had to find out for myself.
Yeah.
Not only experiencing it, but just trying to learn from doctors and professionals and from other women.
Yeah, it's the fourth P I always say was left out in education. So you mentioned the three P's there. So puberty, periods, pregnancy, but perimenopause, you know, that needs to be taught to girls.
Absolutely.
When they're young.
And boys.
As well. And boys.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Everybody needs to learn this in school. The boys
definitely
need to know. You know, their mums, their aunts, their sisters, you know, it's like, that's the thing as well. It's like, yes, it affects us women directly. I think it's 52% of the population, but indirectly, we've all got men that we know,
Absolutely.
People we work with, so everybody needs to know about it.
It affects us all. And we've both just written our first books. My book's very different to yours. Mine's for, it's designed for girls aged 9 to 13. And I've made sure I have put that fourth P in there, the four P's, because the sooner people know about it, the better.
Absolutely. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank
but
you.
But there's a theme, it's all hormones. It's like, it's basically, you know, those little devils that
right.
really mess
things up.
Well,
now you said that, there was a little snippet, there was a little something in your book I was going to read out, because
yeah.
I read it and I just thought, that is so true on so many levels. So you wrote, hormones, weirdly, are never considered by anyone, even professionals, to be the issue when we're struggling. They're never, ever at the top of the list of potential contributing factors to our state of body or mind. Our hormones are clever and like to trick us with their lack of consistency and rebellious attitude. I just thought, do you know what? That is so true. Yet they evade us as professionals and as people. When we're going through something, often they're the last thing we think about. And actually, yeah, so I've had so many conversations with, you know, thinking about periods throughout our lives. We've been having periods for many, many decades. Yet even myself as a doctor, my scientific knowledge and having lived with periods for decades, I'll be ratty and irritable and in a bad mood and, you know,
craving chocolate, want to kill everybody.
Yeah, you know, like my emotions are all over the place, like just bursting into tears at watching an episode of, I don't know, something like, I don't know, like The Apprentice. And then the next day I get my period and I'm like, ah, it's like, but again, why are we not, you know, I don't make that connection until the next day when my period comes.
Yeah.
It's like, why do our hormones evade us?
I know.
Why do we not think about them?
Well, you see, I started to become much more in tune with my body because I was so up and down. Like I was literally probably only about 3 or 4 days where I felt normal in a month.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got all these, the rise and fall of everything. And so I started to become really interested and I was like, I feel like absolute crap. I don't fit into my clothes. My boobs are hurting. I'm swollen. I'm sore. You know, then I'm angry. Then I'm emotional. Then I'm hungry. Can't stop eating. And it was just this like a crazy roller coaster for the whole month. And then I'd finally get my period and I'd be like, oh, okay, I can breathe again.
Yeah.
So
well, then you know you've got that period where it's a little bit easier, where your hormones are more favourable to
exactly.
feeling the way you
want to
feel.
And you just have to deal with maybe some pain or some heavy bleeding. Or So, yeah, it's been a struggle. It has been a real struggle my whole life. And then the perimenopause came and it was horrific.
So tell us then, talk me through your experience of the perimenopause and then the menopause.
Yeah, so I was 42. I started to feel really low, like low moods, like dark moods. I started to have anxiety. I'd cry a lot. I just felt like I couldn't cope anymore. I felt like I couldn't process changes any kind of stress. I just felt so lost and I didn't recognise who I was. So I went to the doctor, and I think, you know, I've spoken to loads of women now. I know that this is a really common thing, because we get to the doctor's surgery, we're so grateful to be sitting in front of the doctor. We know we've got such a short window of time, and you can't really express how you're feeling. You just burst into tears. You're just like, and then this is happening and that. And I understand the first port of call, the doctor's like, oh my God, you're clearly on the edge. You're really down. You know, have you had a breakup? Have you had a bereavement? The first doctor I went to see put me on antidepressants, and I get that, and there is a place for them, but I just had a feeling that that wasn't what I needed. I just knew that there was something else going on. So I did take the prescription and I got the antidepressants and I took them, but I wasn't happy taking them. And I don't know why. I felt like it was a bit of a cop-out from the doctor, and I felt disappointed. And I just felt that I knew that there was something else going on. It wasn't just my mind. It was like the disconnect between my body and my mind as well. I took them for a while, and I went on holiday with George. I just got back with my partner, George, who I'm now engaged to. He's in the book a lot.
Which is very exciting.
It's really exciting.
Lovely, George.
And so I, in theory, should have been really good spirits, you know, new relationship, super happy. Anyway, we went on holiday, our second holiday together, and I had forgotten to pack my antidepressants. And so I sort of had three left, and we were on like a 10-day trip. And so I had to slightly wean myself off of them, which I know isn't ideal. And if you are given that prescription, you have to wean yourself off properly and speak to your doctor. But I just had to wing it because I couldn't get them.
Yeah.
So I did like half and then a quarter and then just sort of tried to stop them, and
you did the best that you could under the circumstances.
So I stopped them, and then I didn't really feel any different. And the thing is, with perimenopause, it starts kind of morphing into other things. So then the sort of the mood changed, and then I started, my cycles started going all over the place.
Right.
So I'd go from a 28-day to a 23 to a 15 to an 8-day to every 3 days.
And it had always been quite regular.
And it would always been like clockwork.
Mm.
And then I started bleeding so heavily, like hemorrhaging blood, where I couldn't leave the house. Like if I was sitting here now with you talking, I'd be so paranoid I was going to bleed through. And I did occasionally on buses and restaurants, and it was just mortifying. And then along with that pain that used to come with the periods, there was like a nauseous feeling, like really sick, where I just curled up in bed and I just didn't want to leave the house. And then the anxiety came back, and this was kind of over a few years here and there, and it kind of changes and it comes into something else. And then I started getting hot flushes, and then I started getting night sweats, and then the anxiety comes back, and then you're sort of lying in bed at night and you're just about to fall asleep. This is one of the worst side effects, I'd say, because you're going to sleep and you know sometimes when you feel like you're falling and you wake yourself up. It was similar to that, but it was like somebody had grabbed hold of my heart and was crushing it. So I now know that it's like a sort of adrenaline surge.
Yeah.
And so that would happen, and I'd be terrified to go to sleep because I thought I was going to die. Like it was literally terrifying, and I couldn't really explain it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I went to a couple of other doctors. I started going to see this acupuncturist, this lovely facial acupuncturist, and she would look at my tongue, how Chinese doctors do. And she'd always say, you're really hormonal, you're getting your period. And literally the next day I would bleed. Like she was kind of witchy and brilliant. And as soon as she put the needles in me, I just felt like it was a balloon being popped, and the hair would just...
Right.
I was just so tense, and I put on weight. I put on about 3 stone. So all these things started happening, and it wasn't overnight, and it kept changing. So it was like a moving target. It was really hard to lock down what was happening. And so it wasn't until I saw Sarah, who's the acupuncturist, that she said, I think you're perimenopausal. And I think that was probably the first time I remembering that word and relating it to me.
So how old were you then?
So I was about 44.
Right, okay.
So it was 2 years after I first experienced the sort of sadness and the dark moods and the emotional kind of, and the rages. Oh my God, I got angry. I forgot to say about that. Poor George.
I mean, there's a bit at the end of your book. It's a dialogue, an actual dialogue you had with him. I was actually sobbing, like proper tears reading that. He's so lovely. We all need a George.
He's amazing. Honestly, he's been my...
But I want to hear about the rages.
But yeah, I used to just, we'd be having a great time. Mm. Have a couple of glasses of wine, come in from a date, and all of a sudden, bang, I'd just switch. Out of nowhere. It was almost like I was like dual personality. I'd just turn into another person. And I would just see red, and I'd just want to scream and shout and cause chaos and just ruin everything. And then you're left with this guilt and you just feel awful because you're just like, oh my God, he's going to leave me. What's wrong with me? So you've just got all this sort of these mind games that you're kind of playing with yourself, and you're just trying to work out why you don't recognize yourself anymore.
So at that time when that's happening, and, you know, it's threatening your relationship, or you perceive, actually, when you read the dialogue from George, it was never threatening the relationship, yeah. Bless him. But that's your perception, and it's awful, and the guilt. Did you know it was your hormones causing it at that stage?
I still didn't really know. It wasn't... looking back, I think he did. Because when you read that dialogue, he's almost so much wiser, and he knew it was...
Well, he says he knew it was that wasn't really you. Yeah. It was a behaviour, it wasn't you.
And, you know, he now knows that I've had a lot of very traumatic relationships. Mm. And I didn't know myself whether it was... I was scared to let him in because he was a good guy and he only had my best interests. And I didn't know whether it was... it was my defense mechanism going up because I was feeling vulnerable, and perhaps it could have been a bit of that as well. And so that's why with the book, it turned out being much more personal than I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
I had to dig deep and try and work out, like peel back those layers and see, you know, is it me? Is it my hormones? Like, what's going on? Is it both?
Yeah.
And I think it was a combination of both, but I think deep down it was my hormones causing those rages and trying to just mess things up and cause chaos. Your confidence goes at perimenopause. Like, you don't trust yourself. The brain fog, the sleep deprivation. You wake up the next day, or if you're lucky enough to have slept, and you're just like, who the hell am I? How am I supposed to go and do a presentation? How am I supposed to get on public transport? How am I going to get dressed?
Yeah.
You know, your clothes don't fit you. Your face starts changing. Everything about you is just like, you're like, I don't know who I am anymore. So, you know, those days when I just sit on my dressing room floor and like piles of clothes around me, I'm like, I'm supposed to go out and nothing fits me. I'm supposed to go and host an event and nothing fits me. How am I going to stand up on stage? I don't even know what my name is, let alone like, I'm doing a podcast today. It's with Doctor. Who is it? I know you. You're my friend. Yeah. It's like, you know, it would just be you start not relying on your own brain to be there for you. And then your body's letting you down because you're pouring with sweat, and then your head bleeding, and then you're bigger than you want to be. And it's just all these things that's such a shock, and really hard to get your head around.
How old are we now?
We are 46.
Right, 4 years in.
Yeah.
And 4 years is a long time.
It's a long time. And by this point, I was 3 stone heavier. I was not sleeping. I would go to bed and the sheets would be... George would come in for a snuggle and I would just be like, it's like, get off me. Just the heat that just used to engulf me. And then...
The furnace. Was it the furnace?
He called me Fernie, but it just... I didn't know how to spell Fernie, so I just put the furnace in the book. But he used to be like, Fernie's back. Oh. And it would just be like whoosh of heat. Yeah. And then the bed sheets would be soaking wet. Mm. Then I'd have to get towels, put them down. And then you start shivering cold because the bed's soaking wet. Then you get hot. Then you get cold. Then you're peeing all through the night. Some reason, I don't know where the liquid was coming from, but I'd kept peeing every hour on the hour. And so then I'd wake up and then I'd have that adrenaline surge if I did manage to fall asleep. And then the next day I just would be like, I just can't do this. And that went on for about a year.
So is this 2020 then? You meet Dr. Naomi Potter.
At the end of 2020, in October.
And you start finally taking the correct HRT,
which I now know to be the correct HRT. And I was like, when's it going to kick in? How long is it going to take? So yeah, this is October. And I think I started to feel better probably about a month in.
Right.
Yeah. And it is a juggling act because, again, it's a moving target. You have to go slowly. You have to start slowly and manage your expectations. But the reason I wrote this book is because I wanted to explain to people that it's not a silver bullet. It's not like you're going to take it and then all of a sudden life's fantastic. You might not get your libido back. Mm-hmm. That's just something. I'm still looking for mine. I'm on testosterone. It's just, you know, you change as a person, but you can do a lot to help yourself.
But I think that's so important. I think it's really brave of you and really honest, but that's what really helps people, because this is the stuff that people don't normally talk about. They normally hold back on.
Yeah,
so well done.
Thank you.
Anyone who's listening, if you want a really honest, open account of everything that happened to Lisa, it's all in there. No holds barred. I mentioned before that we're a similar-ish age. There's a few years difference.
I'm older than you, though.
A little bit.
You're being kind.
Well, I guess I'm 43 now, so I'm the age now when you were going through all of this. And I'm a doctor, but I find it, because I'm surrounded by it, I'm a little bit terrified. But I think one thing that I did want to talk to you about, we met our partners at a similar time. You know, we both met our partners later in life. Before I met Stuart, I really always wanted to be a mum, and I know you felt the same way, and I froze my eggs a few years ago. And I think, you know, I feel so grateful, so fortunate that when I met Stuart, you know, within three dates, we'd had the conversation, and within 6 months we were trying to get pregnant, and we're so, so lucky that we've got little Lisbon. And you are always so lovely, like,
oh,
throughout
my
pregnancy.
He's gorgeous.
Ever since he's been here, you're always, how is he? You're a proper girl's girls, and you really care. But I must admit, there's a little bit of me that always just feels, because I know what it was like when I was in my late 30s. I was 40 when I got pregnant, and people around me were having, all my friends who were younger than me were having their second baby and married and third baby, and I'd always feel so happy for them, but just a little bit of resentment, a little bit of, I don't even think it was jealousy. I think what I felt was, it just felt a bit unfair. And so that was always at the back of my mind, because I knew we sort of met our partners at a similar time, that you've always been so kind and so lovely, and I know it's genuine, but I've always just felt a bit bad, because I know you did want to say.
I did want children, absolutely. I always wanted kids.
And I've never asked you about it.
No, I know.
I know I'm doing it on a podcast when lots of people are going to listen. Is that okay to ask?
It's totally
about?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you. You really sensitively put that question, and I can tell that you're getting emotional. So
feel emotional.
I'm trying
about
not to.
It.
But no, and it is, you know, it has been a big deal. It has been a process, definitely, to get to this point where, you know, you have to do some work on trying to be really grateful for what you do have in your life. And I think, you know, up until this time, in the book, there's stuff that I've never mentioned, you know, that's happened to me. And I think, you know, I got a lot of judgment from people, you know, for not having children. And a lot of people just assumed that it was a decision and I chose my career and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's never that simple. There's so many different variables that can happen. And in actual fact, I just kind of ran out of time. And I don't know how life has gone so quickly, but it has. And I have been pregnant. And, you know, I know what you mean about the sort of the, not jealousy or envy, but that sort of that pang of something in your gut when a friend says, I'm pregnant, and you're like so happy for them. But at the same time, it's slightly tarnished with a sadness that you just think, oh. And then I still kept thinking that I might still get pregnant. But, you know, once I got that that first perimenopause diagnosis, I said to George, look, if you want to think about having kids, we're going to need to do something, like, you know, we'll either need to have an egg donor or, you know, because I'd already gone to look at freezing my eggs. I was just over 40. So I was maybe like 40 in 6 months. And, you know, the doctor was like, I just think it's really low percentage once you defrost the eggs, you know, it would be better with an embryo. And I didn't have a partner, so that was never a thing. And then I got pregnant naturally, literally like about 6 months later. So I was always thinking like, it'd be fine, I'll cheat the system, somehow I'll get through this. So I said to George, if you do want to have a baby, we need to think about this. And he just put my mind at ease, and he just looked at me and said, I'm just so happy that we're together. Like, if it's just you and me, then that's all I need. And immediately it just took that pressure off, because I felt like I was letting him down as well as myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you love somebody, it feels like not for everybody, but it feels like the next natural step is to, you know, have a baby together. So it was a bit of a process. And I'm not going to lie, even once we'd come to that decision, I still thought maybe this month I'll get pregnant. And I did still think that for probably till about 2016.
Yeah.
I still kept thinking, yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then I sort of gave myself a big, hard reality check and was like, you need to let this go now. But the lucky thing for me is that I'm really close to my sisters, and we've got, you know, on my sister's side, there's three little nieces and nephews who I couldn't love any more if they were my own. I swear,
you are the best auntie in the world.
And then my brother-in-law, George's brother, and well, no, we're not technically married, there's two little girls there as well. So I've got like five kids all under 11.
Yeah.
So I get that FaceTiming and we're chatting all the time, and I get all of that goodness, and then I can give them back, and then I can have lions, and I can
and
go
then
on
you
holidays.
Get to go on holiday wherever, to adult only resorts. On
so
cruises.
I can go and see
and you
my
get to
friends.
Go, you get to stay in bed on a Saturday morning drinking coffee.
Drinking coffee, watching documentaries, which I'm sure a lot of mums and dads too. You're probably just very good parents and you've got your children under control.
Not yet.
He can't make your breakfast yet. He's still a little bit young, but he'll be air frying your dinner soon. So it was, some days I've definitely put it to bed. That's not to say I still do get little pangs of, like, when I see George with my nieces and nephews, he's so good with them, and he's so clever and gorgeous that I just think, oh, I'd love to see him. And we're like, I know that if we were to have a son, if we would have had a son together, we're in such a little geek. like a proper little train spotter, like a little mini George with a briefcase. It would be just so cute. Not that George has a briefcase, but he used to when he was younger.
There's loads of other things I wanted to ask you about, but what I'd like to do for the last little bit of this is, I'm 43.
Yes.
Had a baby a couple of years ago. And I sometimes, every day, as somebody who is a doctor and who talks about menopause a lot in the media and otherwise, I am very, very aware that perimenopause is on the horizon.
Yep.
So I probably overly think of my hormones, like everything that happens, I'm like, this is obviously perimenopause. But I'm absolutely terrified.
Don't be terrified, please don't be.
And I think I'm not the only one. It feels really scary. And, you know, hearing what you went through, it was horrendous. So I think the next question to you is, what can people who are going through it, who are in it, or people like me who are, you know, it's the big thing to happen next, how can we have the perfect perimenopause or the perfect menopause? What can we do? What are your tips and tricks and take homes and advice to, one, prepare for it, and two, you know, get through it as seamlessly as possible? And I think knowing what you know now, I guess thinking what you would have said to yourself back then.
Firstly, don't be scared. Mm. Don't be scared, because we're so much more informed these days. We're so much more educated to recognise what's happening to us, that you won't have to struggle alone or in silence or to feel like you're losing your mind. But I don't want you to be like, oh, it's coming, because then you're just wasting your life and you're not living in the moment.
Yeah.
So just read up about it and, you know, speak to your friends, speak to your loved ones as and when you're starting to feel differently, things are changing, you know, have those conversations, like don't bottle things up. You know, speak to your friends, because if you've got friends of similar age or even younger or older, like we all have a very unique perimenopause journey, and at different ages as well. It can happen younger, it can happen older. So I'd say don't be afraid to talk about it. Don't be afraid about it at all, because, you know, once you know what's happening, you can then start to make changes. So, you know, if you are having anxiety, that's one of the first symptoms that comes up. Try and manage those stressful situations. Try and eliminate coffee. Try and eliminate people that stress you out. You know, try and do more breath work in the morning, like to even 5-10 minutes, just to get you into a good place. If you're going into an environment or into an interview or on a journey, God forbid, driving sometimes freaks you out now, you know, like, or it freaks me out. Mm. Just so that you're in a good space, give yourself plenty of time. Don't rush. Look after your nutrition. Notice if things, food, alcohol, sugar starts to trigger you. Keep a food diary if your body starts becoming triggered by certain foods or bloating, because that can happen too, because your hormones do play a big part in your gut health, as you know. So keep a food diary. Just keep an eye on what's going on and just try and manage your stress. Just try and slow things down. Don't say yes to everything. Don't multitask. Like us women, we do everything and we think we're good at it, but is it good for us? It's not good for us. So just slow everything down and just take this time for you and be kind to yourself and be patient with yourself and start learning to kind of love the changes and the way that we're aging, because, you know, I'm massively pro-aging. It's like you can't stop time. You can just try and accept what's happening and learn to love the little imperfections that start coming up. But I think community, talking about it and being kind are the most vital things. But, you know, also just trying to be in tune with your body. You know, we know when we eat something and we go, oh God, that didn't agree with me.
Yeah.
Or if you have too many drinks and then you start getting anxiety or angry, or you're up all night palpitations because you've had like 2 margaritas and like it's gone to your head. Yeah, just be aware of what's happening.
You talk a lot about acceptance as well.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's, I guess it goes back to what we know. We can't change the things we can't change. It's a lot of it's acceptance and doing what you can to live the best way through it.
Yeah.
I'm going to read out something else that you shared in your books. This is quite early on in your book and I just love this. So this comes from Chinese culture and how they view menopause and aging very differently to how we do. So in Chinese medicine, they believe that during menopause, the energy needed for our uterus to grow a baby becomes free to travel to the heart, generating a renewal, a rebirth, a deeper wisdom, a time for a spiritual reconnection with oneself. In other words, the menopause is time for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what you've spoken about, haven't you? All those things that you just spoke about that can help support you in this time. It's mindfulness, meditation, doing things for you, winding down, stepping out of that, I must be everything and do everything and be everywhere for everyone, and actually showing up and being there.
You've got to put yourself at the top of that list. And it's not selfish, because if you're not up there, you can't give to everybody around you. You can't give to Lisbon. You can't be that. You know, you have to put yourself first. And you know what I also love about Chinese medicine? They call it the second spring. It's the second spring. It's like your time. It's a time of empowerment. It's a time of reflection to look back at what you've done, where you've been, what you've accomplished, be proud of yourself and do the things that you've that maybe you've been too scared to do. And that's why the book's called Just Getting Started, because I believe that I am just getting started. I've got this new sense of self-love and empowerment. And I'm not the same person I was 25 years ago, thank God. But now I like who I am. And I think I want women to feel the same way about themselves and just have that attitude that they are just getting started. They're grabbing life by the balls and they're doing exactly what they want to do.
I mean, I can't think of a better place to bring in our expert now to have a chat with us. Let's bring in Sam, because that is just a real positive high note to end that section on. Thank you so much, Lisa. So we're now joined by Dr. Sam Weil. Thanks for joining us, Sam. And it'd be great to kick off by hearing a little bit both about your professional and personal experience when it comes to menopause.
Okay, so I've been a GP for over 20 years now. At medical school, I think I had the same experience that most of us had, that we didn't learn much about the menopause. I can't really remember being taught about it at all. GP training, probably received a little bit of information about it. And then it was my own experience, really, about 13 years ago now, when I went through the menopause myself. I had a hysterectomy for endometriosis and was plunged straight into a surgical menopause, and really struggled then with the management of it. And so it's my own lived experience that made me want to research more about it and find out about it. And going through that then really sort of gave me that passion to ensure that other women didn't have the same experience that I had. I joined Bupa 8 years ago, then realised that we were seeing a lot of women at our health assessments that, again, were struggling with the menopause. They weren't getting the right information. They didn't know what treatment they should have. And I spoke to my colleagues at Bupa and we talked about how we could help women.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. It's really refreshing, I think, to have a professional and expert, but also to have that lived experience.
Absolutely. And so you were plunged into a surgical menopause. You didn't get HRT or advised?
I was given HRT, but a very old type of HRT that we don't use so much these days. We do find a lot of gynaecologists still prescribe it, but it wasn't one that particularly suits a lot of women. Yeah. So I had quite a lot of side effects from it. And so over the years, I had to try a lot of different treatments before I found the one that really suited me now.
Because I hear this so much about just women not getting that aftercare.
Yeah.
And that they just, like, the symptoms and the side effects and the suffering they have to go through once they've had going through a surgical menopause is just hideous. Yeah.
But Sam, first of all, I just wanted to pick up with you. You've obviously listened to the conversation that Lisa and I just had. And was there anything anything that you wanted to comment on? Correct.
Yeah, correct me.
Elaborate on, and I think also actually Lisa wanted to clarify a couple of things with you, but first of all, yeah, anything you wanted
to... Well, just to say thank you, Lisa, so much for sharing your story. I mean, it makes such a huge difference, doesn't it, for women to hear people like yourself sharing your lived experience so that they can learn from it and get that help that they need. So yeah, thank you. And I can't wait to read the book.
Yay.
Well, I think really interesting what Lisa said, just to put it sort of into perspective, that one in 1,000 women under the age of 30 will go through the menopause, one in 100 under 40, one in 20 is between the ages of 40 and 45. So, you know, it wasn't that uncommon, yeah. you know, that age. So, you know, again, as you said before, this is not just a disease of old women. Mm. We've got to remember that this could be happening to anybody amongst us, you know, in our personal lives, in our work lives as well.
And as you've rightly highlighted, you know, even younger women, because of surgery, because of treatments for cancer, etc.
Yeah. So just to highlight on that, I think interesting as well what you were saying about, you know, finding the right treatment. Bioidentical hormones are not good. They have been around for a long time now, but they are unregulated. They don't have that evidence base behind them. We don't know how they interact with other things. We don't know if they're even being absorbed. And a lot of ladies will say that they want to have those because they're being marketed as a more natural approach. Well, most of the modern HRT that we use these days is body identical HRT. It is natural. It comes from yams, which is a root vegetable. So the estradiol that we use, the eutrogestin that we use, it's as natural as it's going to get. And it mimics our own natural hormones. So I always reassure women in that way as well. So you don't need to have loads of fancy blood tests. You don't need to have scans and things. over the age of 45. NICE guidance, so the National Institute of Health and Care Excellence, which is the guidance that we follow in this country, tells us that you don't need to have a blood test. If you've got all those other symptoms of the menopause, you don't need that FSH blood test at all. Mm-hmm. Under the age of 45, yes, if you're considering it as part of other diagnoses. But again, if there's enough symptoms there, then we can treat without that blood test being raised, because as we were just saying, you know, it fluctuates so much, not just day to day, by seconds. Really? So, you know, you can take a blood test 1 minute and it's up there and the next minute it's down there. So we can't use that for diagnosis. We have to go on symptoms as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I know this is something that's come up for me a few times, actually, in clinical practice as a GP. We can't just automatically assume it is menopause. Even if a woman is having a set of symptoms that could well be menopause, it is to some extent still a diagnosis of exclusion, isn't it?
And we have to
there
be
are lots
careful.
Of things we need to rule out and not miss, such as thyroid disorders, you know, diabetes. Exactly. There are so many things that
can
have similar.
Heart issues if they're having the adrenal thing. It could be if you're younger. It could be.
Totally.
And because menopause, as you've rightly said, Lisa, can literally give, well, it can just about give any symptom from top of our heads to the tips of our toes. So I guess to people, you know, if you go in to see your GP, absolutely, please do tell us, I think this is menopause.
Yeah.
Say those words, I think this is menopause, I think this is perimenopause. Let us know, that's so helpful for us. But your GP might still want to do some tests to rule out other things, and that's the right thing for them to do. And they might do an FSH, they should do if you're under the age of 45, but they may do one if you're over
Even
that age
Even that's confusing
sometimes.
Though, because then they say, oh, you're within range, and it's like, well...
It means nothing, yeah.
Yeah, so that's
And it means nothing.
Thing.
So if we get an FSH, which is above 30...
Yeah.
That's diagnostic of menopause. That's useful. But if it's below 30, it doesn't mean it's not menopause or perimenopause. Mm. It's less useful.
I would write a list of, like you said, write a list, go in there and be like, this is what's happening. Don't leave anything out.
Could it be?
Yeah.
Could
Vertigo,
it be the menopause?
Vertigo, tinnitus, all these different things that you know, that you think, oh, I had a bit of a dizzy spell. Write it down and take that list so that you can get your point across in that short time you've got.
Yeah.
With your GP.
And I think often for some women as well, a 3-month trial of HRT is not going to do them any harm. So sometimes we will try that too. You know, whilst investigating for other conditions, could this be something else, and doing those other blood tests? But actually having a trial of HRT is not going to do any harm.
And that's sometimes the best way of identifying if it is menopause, isn't it? Well, we'll try 3 months of HRT. If it makes a difference, that would indicate that it is menopause. If it doesn't make any difference, that's indicate that it's less likely.
The drawing board.
Oh, right, let's go back to the drawing board and start again.
Yeah.
Lisa, did you want to clarify anything with Sam?
estrogen dominance. I just don't know how to explain that. And I don't know how to explain that when I did go and see the really expensive doctors, that they only gave me the progesterone cream, which we now know transdermally doesn't absorb. Why did they say that I didn't need estrogen? Why were my bloods coming back as looking like I was estrogen dominant?
Yeah, I don't know. So we wouldn't normally check your estrogen levels. That's not something that we routinely need to do. If you're going through the perimenopause or the menopause, the symptoms that you're getting suggest that your estrogen levels are low, and therefore you need topping up with estrogen. So we give estrogen, and that's what helps with our symptoms. The progesterone we give, actually, we only need to give to women that have uteruses that haven't had a hysterectomy, to protect the lining of the womb from too much estrogen and overstimulation of it. And so the progesterone in itself isn't normally a treatment. Now, uterogestin is brilliant because it does have a sedative effect to it. So for women that are having problems sleeping, it can help with that too. But it's actually the estrogen that is, you know, helping with most of our symptoms.
Yeah.
So, you know, with conventional medicine, we don't really recognise this estrogen dominance. We know you need estrogen.
I think that's helpful, because I often get asked by patients, can you check my estrogen levels? Can you? And we can't really. It's not within our guidance to do so. And that's why, because it doesn't actually change the outcome of the treatment.
There are some circumstances when we might be checking them if we were considering starting testosterone, if someone is on a maximum dose of estrogen and they're still getting a lot of symptoms, just to see if they're absorbing it properly. But it's not something that routinely needs to be done. It's certain cases only.
Mm-hmm. Sam, Lisa kind of set out she gave some really good tips and advice, and there's loads more in the book about how people can approach life, this part of this window of life, perimenopause and menopause, a lot of it around self-care and self-importance, I think, and self-love. Do you agree with that approach, or can you add anything? What are your thoughts?
Absolutely agree. Absolutely. So before I even talk to my ladies about having HRT, we talk about lifestyle.
Yeah.
it is so important to look after yourself. And as you said, Lisa, you've got to make yourself the priority and you shouldn't feel guilty for doing that. So you need to eat well. You need to have a healthy, balanced diet. We all know that we can gain weight, unfortunately, going through the menopause and our body. I always say to my patients about, you know, middle age spread, unfortunately, does exist. It's our body's way of sort of laying down estrogen. It lays down fat in a way to mimic estrogen. So it does happen. The bingo wings come in as well. We start to lose some of our muscle mass. So important to eat well, get a lot of protein in your diet, and exercise too.
Yeah.
And exercise helps us maintain our bone mass, which we start to lose after the menopause. Makes us, you know, stay nice and strong. We had that mindfulness element with it too. It helps us maintain our flexibility, our mobility, and also obviously we'll hopefully have some benefit with some weight loss as well. But even if it doesn't, you know, I say to women, there's so many other benefits you're getting from your exercise. Don't give up just because you're not losing weight and you want to.
Yeah.
So really, really important. Keep alcohol to a minimum as well, as you said. You know, apart from affecting our mood, it can really affect our sleep quality. It can set off a lot of those menopausal symptoms as well, hot flushes being one of them. So, you know, don't smoke, obviously. Our risk of heart disease increases after the menopause. So more than ever, we need to look after ourselves at this time of life. All those things that we all sort of, I think in a way, because we hear it so often, we almost negate them. Mm-hmm. But it's so important at this time of life to be really looking after ourselves.
Yeah. And I think having just had this genuinely, my thoughts, having had the conversation with you just now, Lisa, as someone who, you know, I know for me, this is the big next chapter in my life that's coming, is thinking, why wait until it happens? You know, I'm going to start thinking about instigating some of these changes now in preparation for, and just to say, I think a lot of the things Sam said there, you have some brilliant experts who've contributed to your book, who've done little sections, haven't you?
Yeah.
Tim Spector, who I love, talking about intermittent fasting. Megan Rossi on gut health.
Can't remember
the name
Potter.
Of your Dr. Naomi Potter on menopause. Yeah. Can't remember the name of your exercise expert, but
Paul Webb. He's fantastic.
Yeah, talks
Paul
about
Webb.
The benefits.
Yeah, he's great about resistance training and really
functional
building
resistance training.
That muscle mass to increase our bone density and increase our metabolisms and all the things that we need to do. And also, you get that feel good, happy hormones, don't you? The serotonin buzz and endorphin.
Well, you never regret an exercise
never.
Session, do you? You dread
never.
It,
but
you never regret it
and
afterwards.
You're like,
ever.
I'm so proud of myself. But yeah, and then there's Rhiannon Lambert, who's a nutritionist.
Oh, yes.
And Dr. Charlotte Gooding, who gives us some good sexy time advice.
There we go. So yeah, final question then. I'm going to bring us back to what I was saying about, you know, we are talking about menopause more than ever in the media, as doctors, you know, as GPs now, we can't get away from menopause training, which is a wonderful thing. There's probably something in my inbox once a month, which is an opportunity to do an online training course for menopause. So there's no excuse really now, I think, for GPs to not be up to date. The new NICE guidance is very, very clear and very succinct, actually. So there's no excuses. But are there any dangers or any downsides to the surge in media awareness? And I'm with you, Lisa, you know, Davina McCall and all those band of amazing women who've been out there banging the drum. Sam, in your clinical experience, are you seeing any pitfalls in that?
I think going back to what we said before about making sure that we are considering other illnesses and we're not putting everything down to menopause. So again, you know, absolutely brilliant that women are coming in with that awareness of it, but we've just got to be careful that we're not passing everything off to that. The other thing is sometimes it's expected that once you've got the HRT, it's almost like the magic bullet and that's going to solve all. And I do say to women, it's going to reduce most of your symptoms, but it's not going to make life perfect.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, nothing is. And again, that's where that lifestyle comes back in as well. You've got to do everything else you can to help yourself in conjunction with taking the HRT. It's not as simple as taking, you know, well, taking the nutrigestion tablet, using the gel, whatever. You've got to be looking after yourself too.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got problems at the moment as well, just with getting enough HRT in the country as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that just needs to be sorted, isn't it? And it's brilliant that we are running out. But again, that's been the main issue that I've seen from all the increased awareness, is that brilliant women are getting the treatment that they should have, but we just can't keep up with the... And then you run into issues as well, because
well, then people are
you're swapping and changing treatments and people are not doing so well on what they were before. They can't get doctor's appointments. So again, that's creating another issue. So that really needs to be solved as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And just to say, that's kind of me being devil's advocate there. You know, I think we're all singing from the same song sheet that HRT is the gold standard treatment, but it's not the magic bullet.
Manage your expectations a little bit and make sure you
it's not necessarily going to fix everything.
Make those changes. Still, I mean, I still get anxiety. I still, you know, there's certain things I still need to do as a matter of self-care and routine in order to really look after myself.
Yeah, and we have to remember there are some people who can't take it, who can't take it safely, or who try it and it doesn't work for them, they have side effects. I think the bottom line then, we can all agree, is this is an inevitable part of life for all of us women. Yeah. And I think, you know, having this chat with both of you, I feel so much more educated, even as a doctor. You know, I've got the scientific knowledge, but I feel more educated, I feel more empowered, I feel more ready, and I feel more positive, I think, about the next chapter of my life. So I want to say a massive thank you to you, Lisa, a massive thank you to you, Sam. And I'm honoured to share my sofa situation with you today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Zoe. Thank you.
And thank you for joining me, Dr. Zoe Williams, on The Doctor Will Hear You Now. For future episodes, to make sure that you're the first to know of their release, click follow wherever you're listening right now. Also, tell us if you liked it. Leave a rating or review or share with a friend. You can find me on Instagram at Dr. Zoe Williams, and I look forward to hearing from you again soon. Insanity Group.